Eyes Radio 314 on the Red Eyes Radio Network.
Welcome, new and most loyal listeners. Thanks for joining us wherever you may be in the world. This is Lana. My two guests today are not authors, not speakers or activists, but they are two born in America women who returned back to their homeland, Europe. We'll talk all about it. Alex Gabler lives in Germany. She occasionally writes for EuropeanGuardian.com. And Melissa Mazzaros lives in Hungary, and she sometimes makes videos for her YouTube channel. We'll discuss the current social and political climate in Hungary and Germany and compare cultural differences with America. They'll also share what they've seen when it comes to the ongoing invasion of Europe, especially when it first began. Later, we'll talk about women, relationships, and more. Welcome, Melissa and Alex. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, Melissa, I wanted to start with you. How did you end up in Hungary, and what are you doing over there?
Well, that's actually very interesting. My parents, they're Hungarian immigrants. My father, he moved to New Jersey in the 70s to escape communism. Mm-hmm. And he was able to do that because he was a truck driver. So he was able to get past the Iron Curtain and drive to Austria. And once he got to Austria, he basically lied and said that he was being hunted down by the Hungarian government and he was a political refugee. They believed him, so he got to go to New York. And then he found a job in New Jersey. And I lived in New Jersey until I was 15 years old. When my father retired, he decided that he wanted to come back because he really missed his homeland. And my mother also did as well. So
now, what are you doing over there now?
I have three different jobs. I teach English. I translate English as well. And I have a part-time job at a cafe.
Nice. So Alex, how did you end up in Europe and what are you working on?
Well, I started traveling about 6 years ago and I would just come and visit family or go with a school group or travel by myself. So I've been to 12 countries now and I decided that it didn't really feel like home in America. So I decided, you know what, if I ever get the opportunity to move to Europe, I would take it. And I met someone, actually, and he lives in Germany with me.
Nice.
And I just moved in, and we're getting our paperwork done now, so I cannot work, which I don't mind so much. And we're just now playing the waiting game, and we'll probably settle here and live here.
Now, do you have some German roots?
Yes, I am half German, half Italian. My family is from Berlin and Bavaria, and then I have family from South Italy.
Yeah, I wonder if there's going to be a back to Europe movement. It's kind of sad because I have a lot of friends in America and I always ask them, well, what's your ethnicity? Where are you from? What about your ancestors? And it's really sad that they don't know where they're from, you know, that they don't have that desire to reconnect. But I sure do. So it's good to hear that you ladies do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wanted to get into, you know, anti-white politics, cultural Marxism. We all wake up to this differently. I mean, it really hit me hard probably a few years ago just from I was out of the country. I came back and then I was, you know, I analyzed news and media and I just started seeing this war on white people. It's just constant. So it actually forced me to wake up. But Melissa, I want to start with you. Share your awakening into these anti-white politics and cultural Marxism.
Well, I mentioned that I do work at a cafe. And that's basically where I noticed these things going on because for a long time I was actually a feminist. Seriously, like I have made such a change personally. It's unbelievable. And sometimes I'm still just shocked at how differently I think now. But, and it really just happened last year when I noticed in my cafe, all these weird people were coming in, like Africans and like, I don't even know, like, Arabs. And I'm like, where are these people coming from? And nobody knew for a very long time. And then it just got worse and worse. As the summer came, it turned into, like, a full-blown circus because my workplace is right by a train station. And all the migrants, they like to congregate there. They would sleep on the terrace. And in July, there was a, like, tons of foreign civil organizations, like crazy people from Sweden being like, oh my God, we have to protect them. And I swear to God, And the really crazy thing that happened is in July, there was actually a dysentery outbreak in amongst them. Yeah, and I remember coming to work at 7 a.m. and then I saw that the area was quarantined, the terrace area and also the square that was beside the train station. And I saw, like, this guy in a white, you know, gas mask and, like, this white suit, you know, spraying down the terrace. And
hey.
They told us that we are not allowed to say anything about it. Like,
what?
We have to keep quiet all throughout the summer. We weren't allowed to say anything about the migrants. And that's why I still use a different name on Twitter, because I'm kind of worried that if they get word of this, then they will fire me. It's not the first time that this has happened to people who work in restaurants and things.
Whoa, and I thought Hungary was a little different, but I guess not.
It has changed, because in the beginning, we also didn't know what was going on. So we were also confused, just like the rest of Europe. But we were the first people who sort of really saw what was going on, because the migrants, they trampled through Hungary first before Germany. And when we started warning people, like in September, like what's coming, then they just sort of laughed at us. They're like, you guys are racist, you know, like, come on.
Oh, God. But,
yeah.
Now, Alex, what about you?
Well, I started on Reddit, to be honest, and I would just watch Philadelphia news. And I was like, oh, great. It's, you know, it's our ghettos again, you know, another shooting. And then I got into European news. There's a Reddit called R European, and it was not censored at all. It was completely open with what was happening. And at first, I was always open to refugees in the sense of, okay, if they're European refugees.
Yeah.
I actually was with Chechen refugees. They lived behind my house. We celebrated Ramadan, even. And they were great people. But then you started to realize how dependent they were on my family, because one of them spoke Russian, and I could communicate. And it became like, okay, these people aren't just here to, you know, live. They are dependent on us to the point where they don't want to move forward and become dependent on themselves. And I started to get into just anti-white hate and lying, essentially, about anything that was happening in the media. You know, people, feminists, any kind of people, they questioned why these rapes were happening, and they didn't understand that what was happening over there was becoming a problem. They would think of it as a rape, as a problem, and they would move forward and question it completely, but then be like pro-refugee. So it was that battling, like I saw, you know, when do we become pro-refugee to the point where it's destroying what we have.
Oh, yeah. Well, Melissa, how has it been, you know, waking up to this war on Europeans, cultural Marxism? How has it changed and impacted your life? Because I know it really does affect all of us when we open our eyes to these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good thing, at least with the migrant crisis, is that it's such a visible thing that you can't ignore it.
Yeah.
Because until now, what was happening was kind of underground. It was very slow, very thought out. But this is like, you know, a brick wall hitting you in the face. You know, you have to think about it. You have to consider what is really going on here. And I guess the lies in the media, they're becoming very visible as well. And so when I really noticed, because I got curious, you know, about the migrants, like where were these people coming from? And I was getting very frustrated with not being allowed to say anything to my friends about what was going on at work with all the crazy situations, you know, women going into the bathrooms and like shitting on the floor, basically.
Ew. Yeah.
What media did you have in Hungary that finally brought it out, though?
They never lied to us. So the major issues they always covered, but some of the things, like some of the smaller things they wouldn't really talk about. Like when I mentioned the dysentery outbreak, they said that there was a major sickness amongst the migrants and they showed up, but they didn't say what exactly.
Yeah.
And they also did not mention that all of the public transport, every single bus and metro line was also disinfected because there was a short period of time when they allowed the migrants to travel free on all of the public transport. But after that, they decided to stop it because they realized it was a bad idea. So anyway,
yeah.
It was really painful when I finally researched enough and I realized what was going on. I could not sleep for days and
yeah.
I lost my appetite. I just couldn't believe it. It was physically painful, but I think it was necessary. And I think anyone who realizes this is also going to have a difficult time.
Well, especially when you're there and you're seeing it, it's an invasion. I would think your survival instinct's going to kick on to, you know, want to preserve your people and your land. I mean, usually invasions don't happen without a war, but now there's literally like a gag order on you. You're being invaded and your hands are tied and you're gagged, you know?
Exactly. The worst part, I think it wasn't even the migrants coming. It's realizing that your own people are not always on your side.
Yeah.
That's really, really hard to take in.
Alex, how's it been for you waking up to these things? Has it really affected your life?
Yes, because I've lost friends because of it, and not the reason you would think. It's become a point where it's very important to me. I don't find interest in, you know, menial things like, you know, going out and partying as much. I'm more like, you know, I would rather go to a rally instead, to be honest. And it's come to a point where I check the news daily when I may have checked it once or twice every 2 days. And I've become more aware of my surroundings also. I'm more aware of what's happening to other people, and I'm becoming more careful about what I do out in public as well. You know, I'm not as vocal as I am in public because I know that my beliefs are being attacked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. People lose their jobs. They get iced out of society for having these views. I mean, we are the dissent now. That's kind of strange to think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, tell us about, I'll start with Melissa. Tell us about the cultural and social differences between USA and Hungary since you've split your time between the two.
Yeah, there's so many. And I think the main thing that I noticed when I came here at 15 years old and I started, you know, high school in Hungary, people are more respectful towards one another. There's a lot of respect towards elderly people. And in Hungarian, there's also a different way of speaking. It's called formal speaking, which is how you address strangers and adults and people of like higher standing than you
nice.
Are.
I like that.
And there isn't that much chaos in the classroom. Education, in my opinion, is a lot better. But of course, the Hungarians, they like to complain about it. But I mean, that's just common everywhere. There's a lot of focus on literature, on poetry, on history. And one thing that I really liked is that when a teacher enters a classroom, all the students have to stand up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, and when there's tests or exams, the students, they have to wear formal clothes. They have, like the boys, they have to wear suits, and the girls, they have to wear skirts and white blouses. So it's just like these attention to these little things. And I think Hungarians, they don't even notice it. They don't even notice how important it is a lot of the time. But it really helps to make people respect one another and just sort of stay in line.
Now, what's the racial demographics in Hungary?
It's still mostly white. In Budapest, which is the largest, you know, the capital, obviously, duh. And there's a lot of Chinese people, but they're really hardworking and they're really friendly, especially to children. They they work obviously most of the time in restaurants or in like tiny clothing stores. I haven't really seen that many Blacks or Arabs. Most of the time they are students, like they're actually college students who come here from like Ethiopia. So there aren't really any like Somalians around, and there aren't really any mosques in Hungary either. There's a couple of like little prayer rooms or whatever you call them. But I think it's something that Hungarians, they really take for granted, and they only realize how important their homeland is once they leave.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
Most of the Hungarians that I've met live outside of Hungary. They really, really miss their country. Like we did too in New Jersey. We really missed Hungary.
Yeah, of course. It's your motherland, right? Or fatherland. How do you say that? Motherland or fatherland?
They say homeland.
Homeland. Okay. There we go. So what about the current political climate in Hungary? Are they very liberal? Or are they conservative? What's going on over there?
Hungary has the most well-organized and strongest right party in Europe. It's Jobbik.
And yeah, sure.
They're the second most popular political party. The most popular party is, of course, Fidesz, which is the one that Viktor Orban is a member of. He's also the founder of it. So basically, the political climate in Hungary is like, everyone is trying to get rid of Viktor Orban. That's what's happening. That's all that's happening right now, because he's really popular, and he has been popular ever since he was in his 20s, really, because he's a very important political figure in Hungary, a very staunch anti-communist. And so they've been trying to do everything to, you know, get rid of him. Like, they try to assassinate this character, but
yeah.
Work either, because I mean, he's a guy who's been married for 30 years. He's a practicing Christian with 5 kids. I mean, there's no dirt that you could dig up on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They just try, you know, these Euromaidan attempts, like in the Ukraine, and of course they get George Soros from the U.S. Department as well to help. But thankfully, it hasn't worked yet, because the Hungarians are very wary. So they know what's good for them.
Now, do you have, is a lot of the youth, are they very liberal, like in America?
The youth in Budapest, they are the most liberal, I would say. In other towns, not so much, especially in the villages. I would say they're very conservative. There are villages where people have never seen a Black person before, you know.
Wow.
There is one town that is still, or one city called Szeged, and I think that's kind of in the hands of the socialists, so that's like the only socialist town left. That's mostly where all these insane liberals come from.
Mm-hmm.
But the very interesting thing with the liberal situation in Hungary is that the vast majority of Hungarians don't want immigration, and they're very against it. However, the liberal parties have to promote immigration, because that's what they're being told from, you know, their heads.
Yeah.
So the liberals are pretty much trapped, because they can't get votes, because the people don't want immigration, but they have to promote it anyway. So there's nothing really that they can do.
Well, Alex, I know you're traveling around quite a bit, so share the political climate of the European countries that you've been traveling through. I think you're in Germany now. So what can you tell us? What are you seeing going on?
Well, I visited Germany every year for the last 5 years, and I would actually go to Gymnasium, which is the German equivalent to high school in America. And it was a very nice Gymnasium, and they were, to be honest, it's compared to 1950s kids, polite, exactly the same as Melissa. It was, you know, they took care of their trash, they respected their elders, a German has a formal in their language as well. And when you when the teacher walked in, you stood up, you know, with everyone. And I wasn't even in class registered. I was just, you know, with them to, you know, just see how it was. And you could tell how much more respect they had for not only the teacher, but themselves. They joked like normal kids. but they had fun as well while they were learning very intense and, I would say, more advanced stuff than the average American. Socially, a little liberal. Definitely the same thing. Everyone's taught, you know, pro-refugee. I was with a guy until I realized how pro-refugee he was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really the same thing as Melissa. There isn't, it's kind of universal in that Central Europe with everyone. I met people in Sweden, I've met people in Finland, Iceland, and when I was in Iceland, there was a women's only tour group, and the only people that could go on the tour were women who are not against racists, xenophobes, you know, against anything like that. And I was just like, that's what they're promoting in these cities. And Reykjavik, which is their main capital, women, blonde, beautiful women, were just on the street puking their guts out. And, you know, they were laughing all about it. So in the cities, I noticed there's a lot more, quote unquote, degeneracy, really. And they're promoting that. I realized on the television, you know, that's normal. That's, you know, oh, they're just having a good time puking their guts out on the corners.
Yeah, unfortunately, Scandinavians, they drink quite a bit. They need to get that under control.
Yeah, and I don't mind a good beer or two. But the way that we did it in the country in Bavaria with my friends is we all brought food and was to a barbecue almost. You know, we drank lots of beer, but it was in the backyard. We went for a walk afterwards. Parties in America aren't like that.
No.
You know, it's let's drink until we puke our guts out, maybe even get alcohol poisoning. And it's just like they want to have fun, but they don't realize that they're doing it more responsibly as well. And people are so much more welcoming when you go to their house. You feel at home no matter where you are, if you're with a distant relative or somebody you've never met. I had an hour long conversation about bakeries in German with a woman I've never met before. And we just talked about it because that was something I was interested in at the time. And socially, people just want to talk to you. And one of the problems is, oh, Europeans, they don't want to talk. They don't want to talk. But I've traveled alone and I've met plenty of people. People are very welcoming to others. And that's the thing. Americans are so anti-traveling. Only 30 to 40% of us even have passports to get out of the country. You need one for Mexico. You need one for Canada. So you're stuck in the 50 states, you know, and that's one of the things also. They love to travel, and that was one of the things that I found that I, you know, enjoyed with them. You know, I went traveling with many people all throughout Europe, and that's something that I realized and I kind of despise. You know, there's a meme out there that says, if you travel, you appreciate more people. And that's perfectly what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to experience things different from what we have every day. And you see, when you travel through Europe, you see all of the different beautiful white diversity, you know, Icelandics. I kind of got to see how they lived. Finnish people, oh man, awesome partying, but great people. Even in Malta, you know, we had a great time just drinking wine over a table and enjoying ourselves. And that's one of the main things is they just like to enjoy other people. And us Americans, we're tend to be very, you know, close in on each other. You know, we don't like to talk outside of our groups and stuff like that. And they don't mind coming up to you and being like, oh, you're American, you know, let's talk, you know? So that's one of the things. But I've noticed they're always more liberal. And so it's always that tension as I like to talk politics. But some of the older ones, they do enjoy like a good political debate. And if you're into that, like you probably find someone like that, you know, anywhere really, doesn't matter.
Now, how's the Holocaust brainwashing in Germany? Because I know it's like you just don't talk about it, right?
So my family, yes, we were Nazis, and I have not seen memorabilia in my mother's cousin's house and stuff like that. And of course, everything with the Nazi symbol is scribbled out. They're very ashamed of it. Oh, I've only been in Germany 5 times, and it was only for a few weeks each summer. And the amount of Holocaust documentaries is awful. Oh, it's...
You would think like that with your family, you would think that they would pass down the true story.
Exactly. I mean, it's just, they really drilled it into my family, though. Some of them are extreme believers in the gas theory and stuff like that. Like, oh, smokestacks everywhere. And I'm like, it was Bavaria. I mean, there wasn't some things like that. And, they're so guilty for believing.
Do they know about like Dresden, for instance, how a bunch of people were firebombed? Do they talk about that or the raping?
No, they never talk about that. They've only talked about the poor Jews or the people in my family. There was supposedly one person that wasn't a Nazi, and they were against Nazism, and they were mysteriously killed and stuff. That and it was just like, well, or maybe he escaped somewhere else. Like, there's plenty of reasons why he could have left the country and stuff like that. And my grandfather was an accountant for the Nazis, so that I'm very lucky he was able to escape barely, but after the war. But they would think he's an evil Nazi and probably wouldn't approve of him for my grandmother and stuff like that. But they absolutely hate anything with Nazis, and probably wouldn't talk to me if they knew my true beliefs. But I don't talk about that with them. I just talk about family history.
It's really sad how the brainwashing has really taken hold. And I think they started at a very young age on Germans. And of course, it's against the law to get into the revisionist material, correct?
Yeah. My boyfriend, actually, he was born and raised in Berlin, and he kind of agreed with it. He's like, okay, whatever. But then he learned about his family and the Greek and Armenian genocide. And he's like, well, why isn't it illegal to talk about how Turkey denies it, mm-hmm. And Turkey denies it. And then he was actually going to become a lawyer. And he's like, he just got into debates over that law of like, why is it only for the Jews and not for the Greeks who were murdered for no apparent reason. And it was 300,000 Greeks that were part of that. And no one is aware of it, really. No one, there's no laws protecting Greeks and Armenians and basically punishing those Turks who disagree with it. And if we want to add Turkey into the EU because they're quote unquote European, they should be held responsible for their genocide that they committed on Europeans.
Exactly. Where's the payout for that? Where's the recognition for that, right?
Yeah.
So what's it like in, Cologne after the rapes? How are feminists responding? What's going on?
I was not in Germany at the time. I was in America, but I was working with TEG at the time, the European Guardian, and we were covering it very mainstream. We were trying to talk about other rapes that happened not only with Cologne, but in other cities that were getting raped. And I talked to one of my friends who is in Temple, and she questioned why the German government didn't, essentially exile them from the country or kick them out because of their crimes. And she didn't understand that, they love these migrants. They're innocent people who are just raping and murdering our women. And then I got into talking about it today with my boyfriend. And I realized when he said it that the German government ignored it. As well as the news media for an entire week.
Of course.
And at the end of the week, the newscast on TV acknowledged their mistake and, basically went back and backtracked and talked about it. But it's too late when you let in 1,000 sex assaults onto a city and ignore it, then, you know, there's a deep problem. And my parents are a little worried that I'm here. My mom is like, you know, worried about what I say now. I told her I was going to be here and she's like, just be careful. Don't get in trouble. And I understand. And she's also like, be careful when you travel. We're going to go down to Bavaria soon and it's going to be quite interesting to see how Bayern looks after the invasion. Cause I was here in, June the last time. So
I remember there was a group of German men basically afterwards, after all these rapes, are kind of retaliating and sending a message. I think they destroyed some windows or kebab shops. No one got raped. No one got murdered. But yeah. The media there focused all their attention on that and were comparing it to Nazis and what happened to the Jews. And they're not talking at all about why they were retaliating.
Yeah. And when we have a supposed democracy or something close to it, you're not given all the options of a political belief. So, you know, there is no conservative really here. So you're forced to go extreme. And so anything you do is associated with that extreme neo-Nazi, quote unquote, you know. And it's a shame because you have a good valid point of, you know, what's happening, and you can't share it with people because, oh, you know, you're a Nazi. And that's a shame.
Yeah, I just learned about, what is it? They don't want to call themselves rightists, so it's almost like an alternative to the right party or something in Germany.
Yeah, I've noticed this not only in Germany, but in America, in the rest of Europe. Labels are the scariest thing to us. Being, you know, labeled something can destroy political careers, you know, and that's why we're so afraid to, you know, do anything anymore. And we're kind of breaking that now. We're being accepted. Okay, I'm a racist or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But we're accepting those labels that are, quote unquote, horrible, against humanity. And it's like, no, it's just a conservative way of thinking. This is how I am. Please accept it. And it's slowly growing, but it's not enough to say it's happening in political agendas and stuff like that.
I wouldn't even say just a conservative view. I'd say it's based in just natural law and biology and just the healthy choice here, right?
Yeah, it's the healthy choice. But in, you know, politics, I would say it's conservative, and but we're not given that option, you know, to vent, and that's why we're accused of being extremist and stuff like that. And it's always migrants are always protected under them, but anything, you know, natives do, it's just 100% against them.
Yeah, I was reading basically these quote-unquote migrants are just getting a pass for petty crimes. That's absolute privilege. That would never happen for Germans or Hungarians or Swedes. You know, they'd get arrested for little petty crimes. Now, Melissa, I wanted to ask you, is there rape happening in Hungary?
No, there's actually not at all. But I wanted to mention about Germany, it's very interesting how you said that there isn't a normal conservative group, because that's really dangerous, because if the Germans finally do get together and they have enough and they just get very emotional and attack, we have to consider that something that they might want to happen, you know, because that will give them the opportunity to implement more aggressive laws against native Germans, and then they could be arrested. They could, you know, who knows what could happen. So it's very, very important to be conservative and not to get violent, because then we're going to play into their hands still.
Like they're trying to coax out what they call potential fascists, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they had their way, some of these leftists, these leftists are so violent, even these women politicians, that they would just mass murder, quote unquote, potential fascists. I wouldn't put it past them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are feminists in Hungary, or what are the majority of the Hungarian women like?
Thankfully, women and men as well are more traditional. And a lot of young girls that I've talked to, like teenagers, they all love children. And people that I work with at the cafe, you know, students, people who are still in high school, you know, 16, 17 years old, they're talking about children. You know, they have boyfriends. And one thing that I'll never forget, it's a really short story that I love to tell, is when I was in the cafe, I saw this lady with her baby, and she was just walking by, and there was two teenage boys who were dressed up in the typical, you know, not really hipster style, but they had their caps on backwards, you know, and they were listening to their MP players or whatever you call them, and they saw this baby, and immediately they just like broke into smiles, and they started pointing at it, and they went over to this totally unfamiliar woman, and they started talking to her, like, you know, like, wow, that's so cute, you know, what a cute girl. And that just stayed with me, and it gave me a lot of hope, I guess, that maybe the situation in Hungary isn't as bad, because we also have demographic decline, but there are positive trends here. For example, last year, I think there was a much higher number of marriages than there was before. So that's also good. Yeah. And with feminism, Hungarians, they actually have a different definition for feminism, because when I talk to them about feminism, they instantly sort of attack me, because they're like, what are you talking about? Feminism's a good thing. They have this vague, airy definition of equal rights and giving women equal opportunities. That's all that feminist means to them. So when I show them examples of what Western feminism is like,
or today, Swedish feminism, God,
yeah, they're just like completely shocked, and they call them extremists. They're like, no, that's not what we're thinking about. You know, to us, feminism is good. So there's definitely a confusion there with them. Yeah.
Alex, have you had any experiences with Femin or any groups like that in Germany?
Not in Germany, but definitely I do have a family member who is very extreme left wing. She is possibly the one that tried to get me into feminism. While we were in Berlin traveling here, she gave me a book on Rosa Rosenborg. And that, I was like, oh yeah, I'm a feminist. And then I experienced high school in Philadelphia. And I was like, oh no, this is not what feminism to me is. This is actually anti-feminism. And they think feminism is the traditional feminism, which is what I am into. But they just... they are not as extreme as American feminists, I would have to say. I didn't feel that, like, you know, pro-trans crap. I didn't feel that. But they were more accepting into gays and, homosexuality and stuff like that. But if you're not into that, it seems like it would cut them off. You know, they wouldn't be interested. They would kind of back away and be like, oh, God, you know, homophobe. So yeah, there definitely are feminists, but I've encountered them more and more in America, to be honest.
Well, Alex, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on women as politicians in general? Are they too motherly? I mean, look at Merkel, look at Sweden. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, if you remember, the Arabs were calling, Merkel the mother, essentially their mother. And, you know, women just tend to be very neutral. Like, I've noticed in my chat groups, I don't like when infighting happens. You know, I want everyone to be coerced, you know, let's work together to figure out why we're all being bitches to each other. And that's one of the things that I realized, maybe we aren't meant to be in politics. You know, we can be role models, you know, we can be speakers in politics, but I really think we should stay out of the high politics, you know, anything running a country. We need to be, you know, when you're running a country, you need to be home, you know, with your kids. And if you're a working mom, you're still given that time to work with your family. But when you're a man, you can put a lot more effort into becoming that person that's right for running an entire country.
Yeah.
And women just, we need to be somewhere else. You know, we have other talents that are much better. Councils are great for women because that's our job. We're supposed to, you know, a council's supposed to make sure everyone's happy. So I think women should kind of stay out of it. You know, there are other jobs for us as women. And it's not just a mother. There's teachers, there's, you know, waitresses, there's anything, you know, but not politics. It's too brutal. Why should we get involved in that in when we have other jobs as councilwomen or, you know, waitresses? And
Melissa, what do you think?
I wouldn't use really the term motherly, but I think a lot of women, they tend to think with their hearts and not with their brains. And they're also very easily tricked, unfortunately, at least a lot more easily than men. And even the feminists, you know, if you think about it, I mean, feminists are also into protecting the group that they believe are oppressed, you know, and that's what women do. They protect the defenseless. And if the media is constantly portraying these groups as groups that are in need and, you know, poor, you know, refugees, then they're going to want to protect them. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't think women should be in politics. Of course, there are examples throughout history where women were strong leaders, but I still don't think it's really necessary. And especially if women haven't been raised with a strong moral compass, it's very easy for them to go astray and to do dangerous things. Yeah.
The one thing someone said to me is, we could be so conflicted with our morality that we can't make a decision that needs to be done.
Yeah.
We have that internal thing of like making everyone happy, but we need to make a sacrifice. Either it's, you know, our reputation, you know, our job, or, you know, making a bunch of people angry, and we don't want that. We want everything perfect and we can't have it.
Plus, men are protectors. They're wired to protect. Nations need protecting. You know, really, I say this all the time, but the patriarchy was put in place to protect women and children, to allow them to thrive. And one of the problems here is the, you know, we have weak white men now, and the patriarchy is falling apart, and now we're being invaded, right?
Yeah.
Now, what do you guys think of our current relationship between white men and women? What's the root of our relationship problems? Either one of you can jump in there.
That's really difficult because it's sort of like the chicken and the egg. Like, which one did it start with? You know, did it start with the men or did it start with the women? I think very interesting is that in Hungary, there's a list of blacklisted civil organizations. These were blacklisted by the prime minister because he views them as left-wing and dangerous and also funded by particular foreign groups that I'm not going to mention here, but we can imagine them. And almost all of these groups are women's groups. They're lesbian groups, they're feminist groups, they're an anti-patriarchy. That's like one of the names, actually, of them, some sort of anti-patriarchy movement. And in Hungary, the situation's not as bad. Like I said, there aren't really that many feminists. And the feminists that are there, they're immediately just sort of destroyed if they try to make some sort of stupid article. Then, you know, there's a lot of wonderful conservative voices in Hungary who immediately tell them why they're being dumb. And then, you know, they back away. So, yeah, it's like, why? Why are there so many women's groups in Hungary when there really aren't that many feminists?
Yeah. Who's funding them? Is it Soros? Probably.
Absolutely. It's proven that he's the one funding Migration Aid, which is the largest migrant helper group in Hungary, and it's led by this crazy hippie woman who actually is dating an illegal immigrant right now, which is very interesting. And so I think it started with the women. I think they were the ones who were turned away, or they were the ones who had their minds messed up at the emancipation. And men, as a result, you know, I guess they felt confused and lonely. And, you know, all of a sudden they had all these conflicts in the workplace with women. So I guess it was natural for them to become degenerate or to go searching for some other form of entertainment or meaning to their lives. And I see that with a lot of guy friends that I have, people who are between 25 and 35. And there are some guys who are still virgins, you know, wow. And they're just, you know, at home playing video games, college dropouts. And I talk to them and I try to be nice to them and I try to encourage them to, you know, go ahead, be brave, you know, don't worry and just go on and talk to women. And no, you know, it's just, you can see that there are these issues here in Hungary too. And it's very complicated.
Oh boy. Alex, what are your thoughts?
Same thing. I don't know where it started, but it's definitely something that I have encountered myself with relationships online, as in friends. And I've gotten a lot of hate because, you know, oh, I don't want to date you. And that was one of the main things that I've encountered. You know, we are judging each other. So the men are hating the women and the women are hating the men. And we kind of are separated from being like, okay, we all agree on the problem, you know, feminism and all of the degeneracy that's happening. Instead of blaming all women and some women blaming all men, why don't we, you know, agree on that and try and move forward to unite and, you know, have that relationship that we could have had if you just realized that not all women are whores and just want to destroy the male patriarchy. You know, I'm quite happy being a housewife. I'm very happy doing that. It's something that will, it makes me happy because I know that's what I want. And my boyfriend, he is, you know, a gamer, and we're both gamers. And he agrees that we have limited ourselves on, you know, communicating with, you know, normies, essentially. And I met someone last night, and he has, you know, a gamer wife, and she's not as political as him. And they work. They both work, and they have kids together. And they're moving forward by agreeing that, you know, we can have a relationship. But then you have the men that, you know, just think that feminism has completely taken over.
Yeah.
And it hasn't.
No, it hasn't.
There are women out there that can have a relationship with men. And the root of the problem is always going to be feminism and the war and how we've gotten, you know, we were able to get work because of the war and stuff like that. And it all goes back to that time where, you know, the happy family in the 1950s was always viewed as today as the horrible secret, how there was drugs and there was so much depression from that happy household.
And she was being beat up and enslaved, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Exactly. And just to kind of circle back, it's we're turning against each other. And you need to look within yourself to see, okay, why am I not connecting to people who are similar to me? You know, maybe if I dress a little bit nicer and I, you know, treat a woman with respect instead of calling her a degenerate whore after not knowing her very long, it doesn't help the situation. We are all part of this movement. We all need to get up and start moving together as one And it's a problem that I'm still facing with just guy friends. They, you know, they're still a little like hesitant, you know. But nowadays I am seeing with at least my age group, not with the 25 to 35, as Melissa was saying, is they're okay with being a gamer, going to college or trying to go to college as it's very expensive and getting that girl, you know, finding that girl. So I think that that age group 25 to 35 really had that problem, and we're slowly going back with our generation to kind of move forward with that.
Yeah, I see a lot of these millennials, even in Sweden, a lot of girls I met that were 20, 21, 22, they're wanting to go to something that their grandparents had, you know, or maybe even their great-grandparents now. So I think there is a resurgence of that old thing. It's only going to be a natural response to what's happening right now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, in America, women, you know, that they don't have that kind of racial consciousness or ethnic consciousness like you do. You know, I'm Russian. I've been to Russia, spent time there, and I just felt at home. It was so easy to make, you know, women folk friends, and there's just a different kind of bond there. You know, you're ethnically connected. You have that kind of consciousness. In America, it's very cut off. Women are more catty, especially white women. They've really done a number on them with the programming and brainwashing and materialism. So do you see women differently in America versus where you both are in Europe? Is there more of a sisterhood? Is there more of a unity?
In the US, I remember I didn't really have that many friends, but I always felt like I was kind of isolated. So I remember my school was very diverse, and, you know, we had Polish kids, Black kids, Latino kids, everything, and they tended to stay in their own group. They were able to work together in school projects, but I remember the Polish kids, they would always be in some far off corner talking to each other and nobody else. So in the US, it was very fragmented. In Hungary, it's a lot more united, not just with women, but with men too. And there is no racial diversity, and everyone speaks the same language. And it's just, you really have to come here and experience that feeling of being in a place where you really feel like you're coming home. Like you feel like you know everything, you know everyone. You can just really relax, and you don't have to be afraid. You don't have to look over your shoulder. And,
yeah, it's like when I hear white people in America say, oh, white people don't have a culture. What? Go to Europe. You'll see lots of culture. You know, maybe you're cut off from it, but it exists and it's an ancient culture.
That's a very dangerous lie. And I think if we are to promote our white heritage, then it's very important that we learn about our history again. We have to rediscover our great historical figures, and we really have to shed this guilt. That's also extremely vital. And we have to learn to be positive, and we have to work together in order to stop this. But I think it's extremely difficult because the media, unfortunately, or at least the important media, is in the hands of certain figures who don't really want to do what we want.
That's right. That's right. Alex, anything to add?
Yeah. So I grew up with a Oma who was born in Germany, was raised in Germany, didn't leave until she was quite old. So I had that at home. I felt, you know, all right, I'm with everyone that's German. You know, I'm German, you know, and I kind of fought it when I was a kid, but I finally accepted it and, like, you know, was proud to say, oh, yeah, you know, this is who I am. And it did kind of make me a little bit separated from everyone else. And then, but Philadelphia, it's quite interesting. There's still some, like, heritage stuff that has survived in the sense of, like, we had a Ukrainian center near me. I had Oktoberfest. I even went to a Ukrainian Catholic or a Ukrainian religious college. So there's still that connection to Europe, but I've noticed it's stopped with people my age. I've only noticed people there that are older, you know, that were maybe their parents were born there or they even were born there and they came over with their families to America. So with people in my schools, for instance, there's absolutely no connection to Europe. It's all, you know, oh, who can get the best selfie and yada, yada, yada. And people, there's no connection. The only connection anyone had was if they were Jewish and they got their free trip to Israel. that was the only like proud thing that I've encountered there. And here in Germany, when I went to school, like, she's right. All the girls were together and they would talk, but then maybe like the guys would come in and they all looked the same. You know, everything was, you know, you either had blonde hair, dirty blonde hair, or light brown. It was, you know, everything kind of looked similar and they all spoke the same dialect as well. And that was like the one connection that they had, you know, their cultures and their the way that they spoke was the same. And I was like, you know, shocked because I had people that were born in New York and, you know, everywhere in high school. And here you have people that you've went to kindergarten with that are like you, that, you know, think like you as well. Even if it might be a little bit liberal, it was still, you all were similar. And that, I say, is missing in America. You know, we have the Ukrainian centers, we have the German clubs, but they're starting to dwindle. They're starting to, you know, get less and less people who join. And it's a shame.
Now we're losing those cultural differences and diversity because they're trying to mush it all together and then give us a Pepsi Cola culture in America. That's what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I personally welcome all approaches and labels, you know, including nationalist, pro-white, rightist, alt-right, you know, there's ethno-nationalists, there's national socialists, you know. Do you think pro-whites are too fragmented into a lot of small, kind of highly focused groups, or should we keep it simple and have one shared goal? Because I do see a lot of kind of bickering amongst some of these groups. I'm like, come on, you guys are like 80%, 90% on the same page.
I think it is very important to have one main goal, especially now that we have one very big problem that that the entire continent faces. I'm talking about Europe and I guess Australia and the US too. So for that particular danger, we do need to unite, and that is the thing that we always need to keep in mind. And if we ever manage to fix this, then I hope that maybe in the future we'll have a union of independent nations who kind of manage to accept some of their differences and they manage to put aside some of their past struggles, and they can work together. And if they do that, then I think Europe would be in a fantastic, fantastic place. But I'm rather pessimistic on this, especially about what's happening now in Western Europe. I don't really think they're going to be able to survive that, unfortunately. Yeah,
and let's face it, at the end of the day, I don't want to live with a lot of these commie lefty white people either. I just want to live with the best of white people in a nation with those people, you know? But I also want to preserve what's Hungarian, what's German, what's Russian, and so forth. Alex, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the labeling I don't think is a problem. We are working, you know, for one goal, but we have so many different beliefs and different styles and stuff like that. White people are so diverse. And I was just talking to someone who was not, you know, able to work with Golden Dawn or German nationalists. And I'm noticing a problem with that. And we aren't becoming one in the point where we're moving forward with that. We're so based on religion still, and just different. There's so many organizations out there that are separating us even more. And I think that's our main problem, is what our beliefs are and what our styles. And we need to start saying, okay, well, you're an ethno-nationalist. That's fine. That's perfectly fine if that's how you want to label yourself. But as an ethno-nationalist, you also need to work with maybe someone who's just pro-white. And we need to start realizing how to work together and how to move forward with that, as well as just have that one idea of we need to save our people. And that's our main goal. We all need to just remind ourselves at the end of the day that that's what we need to do. We're becoming extinct. White genocide is happening, unfortunately. And it's not going away if we bicker on how Lutheranism is the way to go because it's,
yeah,
you know, it's anti-Jew, or Odinism is our true people. Catholicism isn't, you know, it took over and it's a Jew religion. And that's our problem. I just wish that we would focus on one group. You know, we are from Europe. That's our connection to each other. And we forget that. So we'll see if we can remind ourselves of the simple, we are white, we are becoming extinct, we need to stop it.
I agree. Thank you for sharing that. I want to ask, are you both done with America? Is that it? You kind of cleaned your hands of her?
Yeah, I'm not going to move back. I'll visit perhaps just out of curiosity, to because it's always good sometimes to see how bad things really are. But I haven't been to a lot of places in the U.S., and of course there are lots of beautiful places still. I mean, I always loved the natural beauty of the continent, all the mountains and everything. So I guess I will go visiting in the future. When I have kids, I'd like to share with them that. But unfortunately, I don't think I could live there anymore.
Yeah. How about you, Alex?
Yes. Ever since I started traveling, it's been like that. Everyone, like all of my friends in high school, knew that I wasn't going to stay in America. It's just that they knew I was in love with Europe. I might have to go back for paperwork or just to see some family. I'm very proud to be from Philadelphia. I have a Philadelphian accent. I have, you know, I love the food there, even if it's unhealthy. And but I could never live there again. It's not home. I don't feel at home there anymore. Mm-hmm. This has become like who I am. And that's why I probably won't go back unless it's just for a visit.
That's why I tell a lot of guys here or women here that can't find someone, go over to Europe. Try and meet a mate over there and settle down like you did.
Yeah, that's what I did.
You did. I did. I think that that's a great option, especially for, I hear so many guys whining about feminists here. Well, first of all, we're not all feminists here. There's plenty of women like the three of us here. But go to places like Eastern Europe or Hungary or snatch up a girl. You know, you gotta make the effort, right?
I'm telling you. Yeah. Definitely come to Hungary, especially now because the government started a new program in 2016, and they're giving 10 million forints for free to any couples who will promise to have 3 children.
That's great.
Wow.
That's not even all. Like, they have tons of tax benefits for them, and they will also give them an extra 10 million loan that can be repaid over 25 years, maximum 3% interest. And also, there's actually a lot of towns around the country that have been coming out and saying that they will give free land to couples who will follow this program. So they are really going all out.
I love that. Yeah, that's all it takes. Just, I mean, right now there's an incentive for people to come in and get welfare and have kids. That's the wrong thing. Just cut that off and then people won't want to come in. I think Germany did something like that also. Was it in the 30s where they were basically giving incentives mm-hmm. for couples to have children. And then also you give incentives for the right couples, right? So it's almost like it has a healthy eugenic aspect to it too.
My family member is a housewife, and she told me that she gets money from the government to, you know, live with her children and take care of the household. And I think that's, you know, perfect incentive for someone, you know, okay, if their husband can do it, you know, why not? You know, take the opportunity to do it, and also take the opportunity to go out, you know, get a date or two, and, you know, ask a couple questions, you know, see what's out there. You always have to go through the bad, you know, couple dates to get something that's, you know, perfect. And don't be diminished by something, oh, I only see degenerate women. And yeah, there are good women, and there are also good men out there. And we just need to unite.
Yep, that's right. And also, I think that it's kind of, nature's kind of cleaning up our line a little bit, if you know what I mean. I think that the strong will be able to find other strong, and they're going to have strong children. And the people that can't do that won't get to breed.
Exactly.
Well, I want to thank you both so much, and I wanted you to share whatever websites or personal details you wanted to give out. I guess we'll start with you, Melissa, because I know you have a YouTube channel.
Yeah, I'm on YouTube, and I'm on Twitter, and it's under the name Kittens in Your Face. That's a very old name, and actually, I just started, you know, making YouTube videos because I was so incredibly frustrated about how people were lying about Hungary. You know, in the summer, our government was being called, you know, racists and Nazis, and the media was lying like crazy. And I just got so frustrated that I had to do something. So I just quickly went onto this really old YouTube account that I never really used. And the name was Kittens in Your Face. So that stuck. Yeah, so you can contact me there. But I also want to share, if it's possible, I want to mention a video that I think you should all see.
Sure.
If you're interested in conservatism, like real conservatism, and perhaps in a way that can actually help us not be so aggressive and perhaps fall prey to, you know, the governments who are kind of expecting us to really extend out of our reach, that they can, you know, punish us even further. So it's Viktor Orban's Chatham speech. This is a speech that he made in 2013, and he speaks in English the whole way. And he talks about conservative values, and he's already talking about the problems in the EU. He's already talking about wanting to reform the EU. And he talks about problems with conservative parties and perhaps how Europe can fix itself. So this is two, three years ago, and he's still saying the same stuff that he's saying now. So I definitely suggest watching that if anyone's interested in conservatism and what it really is.
So, well, thank you for sharing. And thanks for making the videos, because that's how I found you. So it's good that people put themselves out there and give information, especially people. I want to encourage that more too. And we want to have that too. We want to have more remote international reporters kind of, and then filtering more stuff through our website. We need more correspondence, if you will, in European countries, kind of filming, reporting on what's going on so that we can be true alternative media and report on the truth of what's going on and not wait for, you know, controlled media to tell us.
I'm still at the beginning, so I still have a lot of learning to do, and stop being so nervous, and I also need to buy a good video camera, but I'm definitely looking forward to learning more about this and learning more about, you know, what's going on in Europe. So,
Alex, what about you? Any details you want to share or websites?
Basically, I just write or help out at least with the European Guardian, europeanguardian.com, and I work with the owner of the servers with him, and we're basically just translating a lot of stuff for, you know, anyone who speaks English. So a lot of like the small media that's only available in German, we translate into English and we basically share it. I'm also on Facebook, but it's just a fake profile. I don't make videos, unfortunately, but I'm at least there making articles and sharing articles and stuff like that.
Well, thank you both so much. It's been a pleasure meeting you, and we should stay in touch.
Thank you very much.
I definitely agree, and thank you so much.
Well, I don't know about all you guys and gals, but it has been a whirlwind this week, and it's only Friday, and I usually do most of my work on the weekends. This week, I've seen the good, the bad, and the really ugly, and the stark raving mad. I don't have sock accounts or form accounts to loiter in comment sections, and I'm not putting it down, but I just don't have the time or patience. I have seen how social media has brought out the worst in people. Occasionally, people email me stuff. Hey, look at what so-and-so wrote about you or you guys. I simply do not want to know about it because, one, it will waste my time. Two, it's always based on idle gossip and gross assumptions. Three, it's from people I have never met. Just because you read something online does not make it true. There's also a saying, never fight down, only fight up. It's true, many pick fights with those who have a bigger following as a means to get attention. Getting social attention is hardwired into us. It comes from basic survival instincts. However, with some, they seek excessive attention. That most likely comes from their childhood and early developmental trauma caused by neglect. The developing brain observes its environment and wires itself accordingly to survive in that world that it presumes will be like those experiences. Drama gets attention. Drama causes the pituitary gland and hypothalamus to secrete endorphins, which are the pain-suppressing and pleasure-inducing compounds, which heroin and other opiates mimic. Drama eases the anxiety of wanting more attention than you are getting. Since drama uses the same mechanisms in the brain as opiates, people can easily become addicted to drama. Like any addiction, you build up a tolerance that continuously requires more to get the same neurochemical effect. That means you need more and more to get the same thrill, and you need to go bigger and bigger for it. The other factor, using drama as a drug feels good, so it's rewarding. Reward uses dopamine, the brain's happy drug. It works by releasing more dopamine on anticipating getting the reward. It's there as an evolutionary necessity because, well, we all need a reward after the hard work and we need to be motivated to do it. It's nature's way of getting us to do what needs to be done. You can increase dopamine via exercise, sex, the right food or supplements, meditation, music, or hobbies. People who are low in dopamine compensate with self-destructive behaviors to get their dopamine boost. Things like alcohol, sugar, drugs, shopping, video games, online porn, gambling, and excessive internet use lower dopamine. You get crashes after being online too long. I know I get that even after I go shopping. Some days if I feel down from being online too long, I go outside, move around, take a walk, and I can feel the dopamine release giving me relief, making me happy again. The computer literally sucks life out of us if we don't take breaks. The internet has become a land of instant gratification, and it has a dark side. People are obsessively checking their comments and reaching for their devices. They want that feel-good release when someone makes a nice comment or likes one of theirs. Many are looking for their reward in their computer, in internet land, but not in real life. They live in internet land more than offline in the real world. They don't even know their neighbors, mayor, or local groups. And because we don't have to be face-to-face with people anymore, not forced to have a real conversation looking someone deep in the eyes, we're losing virtues like patience, kindness, understanding, really being able to get to the heart of the matter. Discretion, people hide behind avatars and divulge all sorts of info. Gentleness and forgiveness, it's easy to be rude and hateful hiding your identity. And what about practicing an honorable code of conduct? When you hide behind an avatar and conceal your identity, generally it brings out the worst in you. If you were to be exposed to the world, how would you feel? How would you judge yourself? Would you defend your behavior? Self-control is one of the most important things I value in people. I see less and less of that, and it's getting ugly. Hey, I've lost it on a couple people before on Facebook, people accusing and prying. Of course you get pissed. And they all do it behind an anonymous thumbnail or a sock account looking to feed their dopamine depletion. Most of the people listening to this show are not two-faced, but many are developing multiple personalities that can be detached and compartmentalized between internet life and real life. They go online to be who they are. At some point, what is created in internet world needs to be brought into the real, tangible world. I'm pro-white and I spread the memes. Now what? Once you're done fighting and infighting about Jews and gays and pickup artists and how white someone is or isn't, what is the alt-right, who is more cucked, who is a shill, I've heard it all. Never-ending suspicions, hostility, accusations and bitterness, comments blown way out of proportion. Right now, I do not see a people who is interested in their survival, but a bunch of brats with too much time on their hands. Not interested in cooperation. Not interested in putting aside their stupid ego or making real-world sacrifices. Over the last few years, I've done a lot of shows for white people, and I've taken a lot of hits for it. I've also discovered that over the last few years, I've attracted a lot of people who have become the thing they hate. Their hatred and bitterness over what is happening to us as a people is eating them alive. Eating them so deeply that now they are turning on their own. The JQ has consumed every facet of their lives to the point where if they see others who are successful or popular, it can only be because Jews are behind it. Wow, way to raise that bar high for your people and admit defeat. I've even had people write asking what Jewish organization writes and produces the videos and shows Henrik and I make. This is weakness. There are those who say they denounce the Abrahamic religions, but not true. Because they meditate on Yahweh's people every day. It's one thing to point out the enemy and another to obsess about them to the point of becoming just like them. White knighting can appear desperate. And white knighting for a race sometimes with grandiose ideas, trying to protect and warn everyone, is also a form of attention seeking for survival. Yes. But now it borders dopamine chasing because most white people are generally miserable. They want the feel-good reward, but it's not fixing a damn thing. Change is here for this movement. Well, at least it is for me. It's time to reassess, review, and rearrange and shake out some roaches in the light. The scene has grown quick and fast, and now the bratty child needs discipline. Our white problem is our weak problem, first and foremost. That reward is not going to come without hard work on your house, your family, your career, and your personal everything. What are you building in the real world? Don't tell me you can't do this or that because of Jews. That is not the way of our ancestors to say, but I can't, whatever. If we each build something of strength and make our own lives and family desirable, others will be drawn and want to do the same, want to be and have the same. Knowledge is only step one. I can understand why many people don't like the title white nationalist, and I don't either, because it has been tainted with a scummy past. Granted, some FBI, but plenty have been legit. We don't need the old, but the new and fresh. We need strong, unbreakable, disciplined white people, so even if they are a minority, or even if globalists try and destroy their culture, even if the borders were wide open, they can hold their own with power and strength, able to withstand the pressure and see through the trickery. So before we talk borders, because that may never happen, let's address our own weak spots. Our inadequacies and our own personal failures before we parade around talking about saving our race. You have to be someone other people want to be like. You have to have something others envy. And tell them it's all talk.